Hello and welcome to the Hellas Football Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen, and joining me today, firstly, is Elaine. How are you doing, mate?
I'm good. How about you guys?
Yes, I'm okay, man. Yeah, weather's got a bit, a little bit warmer in the UK, so enjoying that a bit more, albeit with rain, combined with rain. But yeah, overall, okay.
I woke up. I woke up today, and that was great. Knowing Schalke is now topping the league. Yes.
Yes, and we'll definitely get into that further. So also we have Nigor as always. How are you doing, man?
Living the roller coaster that is season 23-24.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
been a proper roller coaster for all our clubs, and I think honestly, maybe just because I keep more of an eye on my club, Panathinaikos, we've had the biggest roller coaster of the lot.
I don't know, man. I think I could say I could probably say as an
Well, you guys have
Olympiacos
had an
fan.
extra managerial appointment, I guess. You've had the Europe. Well, we've had the penalty shootouts, I mean, and with
Yeah,
our
that's true.
long-serving coach. Anyway, everyone—it's been a roller coaster for everyone, and
Yeah.
the ups and downs of football, isn't it? It's crazy with that. It's so hard, congested and hard fought now that we said it. Everyone's taking points off each other. You're down. You're down in the dumps a few days ago. Fast forward a few days, you're living on top of the world like a king again. It's going to be like that until the end of May.
Yeah, until the very end, where we can finally take a
Yeah.
breather. But until then, you're right, Nico. We're very much in the playoffs now, thick and fast. Matches coming every other day. Sorry, every 3 days or so. So we'll start with the weekend fixtures, as we didn't go over them. Well, actually, you know what? We'll go with the playouts first, because there were playouts the day before. We won't really focus too much on them. But Panathinaikos 2-0 winners over Asteras Tripolis. Volos 4-1 winners over Kifisias, so good win for Volos in their bid to stay up in the Super League this season. Bassianina, still bottom of the table, drew 1-1 with Panathinaikos, and Ofi and Atromitos 0-0 in Crete. So that was the playouts. So nothing really too much to shout about them. Once it really starts to heat up with a couple games left to go in the relegation battle in particular, we'll probably focus on that a bit
Panathinaikos
more.
did well too.
Yes, yeah, they did, to be fair to them, and they look set to stay up overall, I'd say. They have had a really good season by their standards, and by the standards a lot of people set for them before the start of the regular season. So we'll go to Sunday's fixtures. So firstly, Nigo, your boys, Panathinaikos, 3-2 loss in Leoforos against BAOK. Let me go to the scorers. So Despotov scored in the first minute, Brandon in the 30 in sorry Bernard equalised in the 29th minute. Brandon then put Balk ahead again in the 37th minute. Stefan Schwab scored a very late penalty after Balacios was sent off. And Bernard scored again in the 93rd minute, but it wasn't enough to get a result. And Balk walked away from Athens with 3 points. So just we'll quickly go through this one because obviously other fixtures have been played yesterday. So you guys are the fans of these clubs. So we'll start with the winner, Alain. Pleased with this result, I presume.
Oh yeah, the victory against Pau was definitely the greatest in a while, and I think Lucescu managed well. Like with the team we have, we're really the best when it comes to counter attack. So we just left the ball to Pau. They didn't really produce so much play, and on every counter attack we were dangerous, and the players really did a great job, and without Katsura mistake, and some without Samatta's misses. And Brandon too, because he missed two. Also, it could easily have been 4 or 5 goals.
And Nick, I guess it was a disappointing result for you at the time. Like I said, other results have now happened, which will probably make you feel differently. But yeah, it wasn't a great one for a Terim and your team at home to lose to Balk.
This was a shocker. In the other losses that we've had, especially before the playoffs, like you think there's only so much the coach can do. He didn't lose that. The players lost that. And I was saying back then, these were the players that got the previous coach sacked, the core group, but this game had nothing to do with the players. This game was all on the coach. It was totally flipped on its head. I don't know what possessed him in such an important game. You've been off for essentially 21 days, so 3 weeks, and you line up with two up front. When you play bulk, you know they're dangerous on the counter. You got to keep your eye on the defense and keep them to nil, and then you take it from there. He tried to be too smart about it, and he got his pants pulled down in this game. I don't know what possessed him to play two up front, and the team was full strength for this game. Other than Magnussen and Palmer Brown, that are long-term absentees this season, the rest were available, and he went with Kotsiras at right mid. That was questionable again. This was lost in the coaching for me. And as Elaine said, what's Bale good at? Counter-attacking, and they're that big side. They don't play that technical sort of, I can pass you to death. They can spring it around nicely. Bulk's style is much more quicker than their bigger bodies. And he's had the perfect game plan to beat Bulk before. He did it at Dumba in the first leg of the cup quarterfinals. It was a quarter, semi-final. And I don't know what possessed him to stray away from that. When we had the ball, we were lost in this game. And up there in that game that I referenced that we won, we were full of ideas when we were able to pass the ball around, and we just couldn't in this game. And as I said, wrong players in the wrong positions, in the wrong formation, and he got his pants pulled down. And now moving forward, we'll get on to the 8th game, but if we want to win it from here, we've basically got to be near perfect.
Yeah, as does everyone.
I noticed some stats from this game. PAOK finished the game with 10 shots on target. PAO only had 7. They hit the post once, and aside from that, they only had one big chance. And including the two goals and PAOK. So 10 shots on target and 4 big chances missed. So the score could have been really, really bigger.
And I guess this game really highlights as well what we said at the beginning of the podcast and what we've been saying ever since the playoffs fixtures were released. These games, like, it's so unpredictable because every game is a derby. It doesn't form doesn't matter coming into any of these games necessarily. Because you could lose one game.
You know what
game.
It is, though?
Go on.
They had 3 weeks off, as I said.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be ready. And what do? They concede in the first minute.
Yeah.
You haven't played for so long. As I said, you focus on keeping the nil for as long as possible. Focus on the defense first in these games. And we completely went against that. And then you're on the back foot and they didn't learn. We'll get on to we conceded in the first few minutes again.
Yeah, and it's a habit that Terim needs to remove from the squad, Nigor, because as we all know, conceding very early or very late could be a killer.
It changes the complexion of a game if you concede early.
In that game,
we were playing catch-up, chasing our own tails. And in the more recent game against Stoke, we're able to turn it around, but we've got to eradicate it ASAP, and it's not just a Terim issue. This has been an issue dating back to the very start of the season under Jovanovic as well. This time last year, we were the type of team that we could only win a game 1-0. It was either going to be 1-0, nil all, 1-1 at most. When we conceded a goal, you knew there was no way back. But now we concede goals, but we score goals. I'd rather us be tidier on the defense. We've really got to fix that. I don't know.
Well, from going to a team that conceded very early on to a team that conceded very, very late on, 1-0 winners over Olympiakos with a late goal in added time from Eliasson. Olympiakos, you know, from my perspective as an Olympiakos supporter, we played very well in this game, probably with the better team overall. Absolutely fluffed a few golden chances to put this to go ahead in the game ourselves. But credit to AEK, they held firm, and late on they got on the counter attack. Our defenders didn't do anything to try and stop Eliasson. Maybe they didn't feel like they could, but they didn't. And they scored late on, and it was too late for us to get anything from the game. So credit to AEK, they won at Hagia Sophia. Olympiakos, like I said, we didn't take our chances. And it was a really big disappointing result. And it felt at the time like that was it. We were out of the title race, but then the next game happens, which we'll get on to. So, yeah, it's disappointing because we need to beat these we need to win these derby matches, Olympiacos, because we've been
seven. I have the stat: 7 big chances missed.
Yes, and there were massive chances as well. I think Masuras missed one. El Kabi missed one. Potence missed one. Yeah, it just.
Masuras missed 3 actually.
Yes, well, we all know Masuras is capable of this, you know. But yeah, well, there's not really much more I can say. Sadly, Greg's not here to kind of give the eye perspective. But all I can say is they, despite the fact they may not play I would say they don't play the best football of the Big Four. They grinded out a result against us, even though we played the better of the two sides. And that's what champions do. And in these massive games, it doesn't matter who's the better team on the day. You just got to win.
You know what I think it is? And I've got to start. I may as well bring it up now. They're so used to winning these games. So up until this, we ended their run this morning, our time in Australia, 17 straight derbies without a loss.
Wow.
Remember when we started recording this podcast about 4 or so years ago? It was the opposite. They couldn't win a derby.
Yeah.
Whereas now you fast forward 3-4 years later, 17 straight derbies unbeaten. So they're used to winning these games. And you guys, are the complete opposite to that where, okay, you beat Bulk away at Dumba. Very, very good win and hard place to go to and all that. But we've had the wood on you this season and so has Ike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's between the ears in some of the in these games as well.
Yeah, and I think that again that unless you have wrapped up the title by the time the regular season's over, which is what we had done in the past, and where you can afford to drop a few points and lose a few games in the playoffs before you seal the title, it doesn't matter. But now, when all four teams are strong as each other, and you go in with such a minor points difference. These games matter so much, and to kind of go into the first two games of the playoffs losing both of them was a big hit for us. Like I said, the next game we won and that was good, but need to improve against the teams surrounding us because no disrespect to Aris, but I don't think they'll finish in the top four because I know they might nick a couple of wins maybe against Balk because they tend to do that for some reason. So apologies, Elaine, but yeah, they. I don't know if they'll threaten now because we just showed exactly how to stifle Aris. But yeah, we'll get into that game. So speaking of Aris, just to finish off that weekend of fixtures, they went and beat Lamia 3-1 in the best of the rest derby in the playoffs. And so nothing really much to chat about. All the goals came. All three of Aris's goals came within 5 minutes of each other. So Silimanov scored in the 55th minute, Garcia scored in the 56th minute, and then Brabeg scored in the 59th minute before Gonotios scored in the 89th minute for Lamia. And that was Lamia's only shot on target as well. So perennial fifth place team beat perennial sixth place team. That's really more. Nothing much else to say about that one. But yeah, we'll go into the next round of fixtures. So we'll start with Olympiacos again. 3-0 win over Aris. So like I said, much improved performance compared to Ike because we actually took our chances. Aris didn't have a shot on target. We pretty much dominated from the get go. El Kabi scored a header from a nice cross from Costas Fortunis. Daniel Pedence scored a nice goal from just outside the box on the hour mark, and João Carvalho came on as a substitute to score the third and end the game off in the 89th minute. So, like I said, good win for Olympiacos because it keeps us in the top four, even though fourth isn't guaranteed Europe just yet. So, I was pleased with the result overall, pleased with the performance. It's what we finished our chances like we should have in the AEK game, and we now go to the next game against Lamia. If we can get another 3 points, we'll be getting that much closer, but it's, you know, nothing's guaranteed in this playoff season. So
yeah, I think that's the closest season we had in decades.
Yes. And in that respect, it's a good thing because the playoffs are certainly the top six playoffs. It's showing that addition to the league has improved the quality and it's made it more exciting, even though we have, at first we complained, oh, too many derbies, going to dilute the derbies. It hasn't, to be fair, because everyone's on an equal footing now, I guess. And so it does make for nail-biting football, whether that's a good thing or whether it gets your blood sort of pumping a bit too fast. But yeah, it's good. It's entertaining stuff. It makes the league more entertaining overall. And that's what I think the Greek Football Federation and the Greek Super League need to do, is push the, like, an more entertaining league to get more people watching, for sure. And they also, well,
yeah,
that, and they need to get it, they need to get viewers.
First, they must work on the communication, because that's a fucking disaster.
Yes, and especially for international viewers as well. They just, it's still no support whatsoever, barring dodgy streams. And so,
just for the anecdote, in France, we have a small sports channel called that's the name, My Sports Channel, and they used to broadcast big derbies in Super League, but at that time there was Nova, and they decided to unilaterally cancel the contract for no reason.
That's a shame. But yeah, I when dodgy streams are better than getting Gosmode on Nova Sport as a pay-per-view internationally, yeah, that's when you know you've made it, that's when you know you need to improve it, man, honestly.
And if ever you just first there, sometimes they even geo-block their lights.
Yep.
And if you dare to share it, they strike you.
Yep. Yeah, and you can only occasionally get highlights on Gosmode's website, or sometimes, so, like, I think Gazeta on or Sport 24 have the highlights, maybe.
I'd say half of the time it says, sorry, this content is not available in your area.
Yep. And they used to have it all on YouTube as well. It always used to get put every weekend, after every weekend fixtures on YouTube, and they stopped doing that.
But really, they need to do better, because
way better.
That third world country method.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll go to
guess that we are the only one in a small league, because I don't like that term. But we are the only one among championships like this to censor content, because I talked with mates from Serbian football, Romanian football, etc., and none of them are ever striked when they post highlights, even on Twitter, on YouTube, on Instagram, etc.
Now that we're on this topic, it somewhat ties into 2 points I could bring up now. Mm. One of them was Almeida's press conference for AEK. Again, it's a bit out of order, but he mentioned in his press conference not to underestimate the quality of the Greek Super League. By doing this stuff, because as you said, Stephen, it's been about, what, 5 or so years since the highlights aren't on YouTube?
Yeah, maybe.
You used to be able to get every highlight on YouTube, every game back then, I remember it.
Mm.
About 5 or so years now. Now you're relying on VPNs and that, or dodgy streams to watch the games live. You can't showcase the talent, for a start, if they're blocked to the rest of Europe. And then all the talk with the Ioannidis transfer, of course people are going to laugh when we say the figures that we say, because they don't get to see the guy play all that often. But why? Because there's no coverage.
Yeah, all they can ever do is look at his highlights on, look at his stats on Transfermarkt, or, you know, when Panathinaikos are in Europe, they can look at his highlights on there in the Europa League, but that's it. There's not really a true reflection of the player, and that's why, you know, we always say that if there's like an English tax on English players, there's like a Greek discount on Greek players, because they're Greek.
Discount. If you we all know, if you knew this was English, the sort of fee we'd be talking is astronomical. Yeah, anyway,
exactly. Yeah, and
it's a shame, because this season's the closest ever, as you guys were saying.
Yeah.
If we had more visibility, I think we would sell players for a better price, because who has access to Greek Super League? Basically, if you're not in Greece, just the professionals.
Yeah, or Cyprus. Cyprus get good coverage, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So just to round that off, Greek Super League and EBO, please improve your coverage because you need to make it more accessible. Next, we'll go to Balk, Elaine, 3-1 over Lamia. So you guys actually conceded first through Ruben Martinez, put Lamia ahead in the 7th minute. Then just before halftime, Michailidis scored in the 45th minute to equalize at the break. Stefan Schwab put you guys ahead in the 70th minute, followed by a penalty in the 88th, which he converted to get you guys a comeback 3-1 win over Lamia in Dumba. Elaine, you said to me before the recording that this wasn't the best performance from Balk, but you know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're not going to have a good performance. At least you got the win.
Yeah. And honestly, I think we could have done much better, but the goal, the early goal conceded, and really there was a huge communication mistake between Ketsura and Kotarski, and there was really like a crack on the head, because players after that didn't react, and we had to wait the end of the first half to do something, and that's the problem, I think, because when PAOK starts like this, sometimes it can be really tricky. I remember the game against Aris, I'm satisfied, but there was quite a worrying first half.
And Samata played as well. Elaine, how was he in this game?
Well, I trashed him enough to say that he didn't shoot a lot yesterday, as usual, but. He was useful on the attack. He gave two key pass, and he gained a penalty. So that was better. Mm. But definitely for next season, we need a real striker.
Yes, and I guess with that result, with other results going in your favor, you're top of the league again. So just 1 point ahead of Ike.
Yeah,
you can maintain it.
Yep, we are back.
For now, until next weekend where something else happens.
Now let's see what Lucescu will do against AEK, and I think the good thing to do, that's my opinion, would be to play like PAO away in cup. Just leave the ball to the opponent and crush them in counter attack.
Mm. And speaking of Panathinaikos, Nico, 2-1 over AEK Athens in Leoforos. So you guys actually went behind through a goal from Vida in the 5th minute, but then you sucker punched them within 2 minutes within half an hour of the. Well, sorry. You sucker punched them twice in 2 minutes through Bagasetas in the 32nd minute and then Ioannidis in the 34th minute, and held on to wrap up a really impressive win against the champions at home.
Our first win over AEK in 6 attempts, dating back to September, it would have been of the last season, so 2022, the first meeting between the two sides last season. And this is what we were saying back then when Jovanovic got sacked, that he was so great for Panathinaikos, but the one coach that always had his measure was Almeida. Since that him has come in, he's played Almeida twice, he's taken 4 points off him. Really should have been 6 points out of a possible six. There was a stupid 96-minute goal we conceded away in the regular season clash against them. And now this one come from behind. Imagine how I was feeling when we went 1-0 down after 5 minutes again.
Yeah.
Imagine. I was fucking furious, livid. We have 5 a.m. kickoff time as well here, getting up for this. That credit to them, because from the 11th minute to the final whistle, it was only one club, that one side that controlled it, and that was us. Ike had the possession, but it's exactly what Elaine said. You give the ball to Ike. That's what we did. We got bodies after we got our two goals, which I'll get onto the two goals. But after we got them, we resorted to a 5-4-1, bodies behind the ball. Their only chance from the 11th minute onwards came from our former player, Gacinovic's free kick in the 92nd minute in a save that you expect Dragowski to make. Other than that, nothing. What I would say, though, is they had a sitter in the 11th minute missed by Zuba. He scores that, different ball game. But the better side won this one, and really we should have won it by more, considering the chances we missed, because even before our first goal, the chances were coming. Like, the warning signs were there for Ike. We had it in the back of the net, but they correctly ruled one off for offside, and the Bacasetas header, Arao straight offside in the build-up there before he crossed
also,
it, and then
also,
we got our two goals.
The score could have been even bigger as well.
No, it should have. Yeah.
Just not
clinical.
I was quite surprised, but regardless, it shows that Ike, unlike what I thought, is really vulnerable when they keep the ball. It looked like they weren't able to do anything with the ball.
And it's mad that it's only their second loss of the season. Their first being against Offi, which was a freak game in itself in the regular season. And this is only their second loss. And yet they haven't run away with it this season. We said
when
before
I
the
sat
recording,
down,
eight draws, which is mad.
When I sat down to look at the ladder properly after the game this morning, I see that second loss and they're not first. That's incredible. It's the amount of draws they've had against the Panathinaikos. They didn't beat Panathinaikos, for example, in either game. They lost to Offi. Those games are biting him.
Yeah, and you know, with the exception of Balk, Ike, Panathinaikos and Olympiakos are all on the same number of wins as well, which is, crazy. And you know what, Nico? This result actually helped Olympiakos a little bit, because even if you'd lost and we'd have gone third, we would have been 8 points behind first place rather than the six. So weirdly, despite the fact we're a position lower, we're actually slightly closer to the first now, because Panathinaikos win. It really has been an interesting season in the playoffs so far, and it's just going to get crazy. And you know, touch wood, I'm glad that nothing too controversial has happened yet, and that has kind of ruined everything.
I thought this was going to be inside myself 100%. I thought something's going. This is it. I thought this is the game, considering everything that went on last season. But yeah, as you said, thankfully it didn't. What else on this one? Just very quickly, I knew this obvious man of the match, closely followed, I guess, by his ethnic teammate Bakasetas. Very, very well taken goal. Where was that against Georgia from both of them? But they different. I understand, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, different team, different manager.
Akaydin, very, very solid at the back. Definitely his best game for the club. Arao, what more can you say? Very good coaching this time by Terim to drop him in from defensive mid to centre back when we resorted to that 5-4-1. He played in the middle of Yedvai and Akaydin. And it worked a treat, as I said, because we let Ike have the ball and we were able to get bodies behind it. And at half, from halftime, I thought it's only a slight 2-1 lead, but they did not threaten us at all.
And I guess just to end this segment off, I guess this is the one time I didn't start the segment with, it's the Athens derby. And it actually is the Athens derby. Of all the games that I've kind of jokingly said is the Athens derby, this one actually is the Athens derby.
Or is it?
Yeah, because Ike isn't from Athens. Panathinaikos isn't from Athens. No one's from Athens. There aren't any clubs in Athens at all, even though that also is the area that has the most teams in the Super League. So you tell me. We'll go to the table. So Balk, top of the league on 66 points. Ike, second on 65. Panathinaikos, third on 62. Olympiakos, fourth on 60. Aris, fifth on 48. And Lamia, sixth on 34 points. So we'll go to the upcoming fixtures for the playouts firstly. So Adromitos play Panathinaikos. Asteras Tripolis play Kitisia. Panathinaikos play Volos in what I believe is a kind of, well, it's kind of relegation battle sort of thing there. And Offi play Pasianina. And we'll go to the playoff fixtures. So firstly, Lamia host Olympiakos, Aris host Panathinaikos, and the big game of the round is AEK versus Balk at Hagia Sophia. So going to be a really interesting weekend, because if certain things go certain teams' way, gap could be even smaller again. New top of the table. Who knows?
We'll have to see. You and I are hoping for a draw in that game. The AEK and Balk.
Yes.
Interesting to hear Elaine's thoughts on it, how he thinks it's going to go, because AEK has had the wood over Balk for the last couple of years.
Yep. Go on, Elaine.
Balk won't go there and roll over, though. So that's what intrigued me the most.
Think you can win at Hagia Sophia, Elaine?
Well, as I said earlier, that really, really depend on how Lucescu will do. And for me, if he does like we play like the game against Panathinaikos away in cup, letting them the ball and just play in counter attack, we can do it. We can do it. But if we try to keep the ball, passing and do nothing with the ball, we're gonna get crushed.
And I guess for us, Nigo, it's just make sure you don't slip up. Simple as that. You know, we lost to Lamia in this fixture in the regular season, so that's what I'm afraid of. Even though we're playing much better now under Mandiliban, for you guys, Aris, the last game of the regular season, I think nicked a point away from.
So it's away this one coming up against Aris, and they beat us up there from memory. That's what I was going to say. In theory, it should be easier games for both clubs, but Lamia beat you guys in this fixture in the regular season, and Aris beat us.
Yeah.
So you just don't know.
No, I
do think Lamia's run their race for the year. I really do. I think we're going to have it a lot harder. That Harilao is a very hard place to go. It has been for years, especially for us. This is a cup final preview. Going to be a very hard game for us. Don't fall into these peak Panathinaikos traps of winning a big derby and then going there and stuffing it all up and throwing it all away and ending the season. Don't. Just win.
Yeah. And so I guess we'll move on. Speaking of the cup, so we'll go to the next news segment I wanted to speak about, which was the comments made by Dakis Baldakos, the leader of the Greek Football Federation. And he made a few comments a day or two ago regarding Gus Poyet and regarding the Greek Cup final. And he more or less said that Oaga is not ready to be used under the new regulations that have been instilled into Greek football to be used as the final venue. Hence why Volos is the venue.
That's not even a conspiracy theory, but that's just bullshit.
Oh yeah, it is.
They're like, you know, Pakrito is still not ready. Kaftos Anglio is still not ready, and many other ones could host the final, and yet we end up in Volos again. So you're just wondering, is Beos paying again to get the cup final also?
In a stadium with a club who might not exist after this season. But you know what? My biggest problem is that they've taken so long once again to choose a final venue. And they've said, oh, yeah, but if the security cameras can get installed and the electronic tickets and such, then we can have fans. Because as it stands, there won't be fans if they don't get those things set up. Yeah. What makes anyone think that they're going to manage to find the time to do all this and then get fans in the ground? If it took them this long just to find the bloody stadium for the final again, then why are they going to take the necessary measures to make sure fans will be in? They don't want fans there. They've made it very clear, and they're not going to get it ready in time. And if they do, great, fair play to them. But I don't think there's going to be fans, despite the fact they said, oh, there's a chance there might be fans there, limited capacity. I'm like, yeah, there won't be any capacity. It'll be empty seats again.
And that's the worst part. I mean, how did we do even just 10 years ago? Even 10 years ago, the final was played at Oaka, and with at least 40K fan, and
we press each other.
We didn't add so much issues.
We played against each other, Elaine, 2 years ago with a big crowd at Oaka.
Yeah,
they've ruined it.
Yeah,
that's the worst part. That is not. There's going to be. We all know. There's going to be no fans at this one. I don't have a problem with Volos itself, the stadium. We knew it wasn't going to be Oaka. They maybe they're hiding behind the fact that it's not ready for ulterior motives there. But me personally, all right, it's a lot smaller, but you can still get 5,000 each fan base in there.
Yeah,
and they're not. That's the worst part.
Yeah. And as I said, that's complete bullshit, because I had a look again at the UEFA website, and Oaka is still ranked 4 stars by UEFA. So they didn't do the works for the bathrooms and stuff like this, but for fuck's sake, don't tell me they can't welcome 40K people from both sides. That's an absolute disgrace. And if you remember, two years ago, there was a big controversy during the game because of the penalty, the red card, and so. But there were no major incident after the game.
And I think, and you know what, Greece doesn't have many 4-star, you know, UEFA rated stadiums. I think it's Oaka, Karaiskaki, and now Hagia Sophia. I think, unless I'm missing one, I don't think Dumba or Leofaros.
Dumba, yeah, was, yes.
Dumba is 4-star as well. Fair enough, but you know, no one's gonna want to pick a venue that's tied to a club. So the logical one would be Oaga, and I get what you're saying, Nick, about how Volos isn't necessarily the problem, and hosting it there. But the problem is how they're going about it, and they're saying one thing when everyone knows why they're not having why fans won't be there. It's not because they're not going to get it ready in time. They don't care. Yeah.
It ties into what we were saying earlier about it being amateur hour, clown show on all fronts. They do the worst possible moves to do the league a disservice.
And
to do the clubs a disservice, to do the coaches a disservice, to do the players a disservice. And that's what it turns the locals, it turns the Greeks away around, because the final's going to be pushed back now to late May. A lot of the Greeks there, from the Panathinaikos end especially, if we make the final four in the Euro League in the basketball, that'll be in Berlin. A lot are going to be flying over for that instead.
Yeah, exactly. Why shouldn't they? They'll actually get to watch it in the stadium.
Yeah.
And it's completely stupid, because if you do it with fans, Pate Saliko is probably the worst for security.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And I guess this is kind of epitomizes this kind of iteration of the Greek Football Federation, and there will be elections in June, and so that you'd expect a changeover. But this is kind of this epitomizes their tenure, and Baldagos's tenure as head of the Greek Football Federation, that they can't even get something as simple as the biggest cup competition the cup competition in Greek football. They can't even get a stadium, let alone the fixture played or fans in the ground. That's your job. That's the point of you being there, to try and improve Greek football. And look, you know, I'm sure there are things that he has done or has instilled that in integrated into the game. Sorry, that maybe has improved it for the better. But overall, I'm not satisfied with his tenure. And speaking of,
you go first.
Gus Poyet. So this is the next point we're going to go on to. Yeah. So initially, his contract's up now. So as it stands, Greece do not have a manager in charge of the Ethniki.
Yep. It's currently It's currently, the seat is currently empty.
Yes. And so initially, after the final against Georgia, when we got knocked out, Baldagos came out and said, oh, in a week's time, we will, you know, we'll sit down, have a meeting, discuss what's best for the future of Greek football, the national team, whether Poyet stays, whether they find a new candidate, whether someone comes in, because obviously there's a friendly in June against Germany, ironically, where there does have to be a manager for that fixture, regardless of whether there's a changeover in leadership at the Greek Football Federation. But now, with his more recent comments, he's come out and said, oh no, we'll do it after Greek Easter. Right then, yeah. So you're waiting until after April. You're waiting so long to pick a new manager, and he even said that Gus Poyet is still under consideration. Which,
to be fair, I'm not sure about Poyet turning down our 5 years Ireland contract. First, because 5 years are not allowed for national team managers. And second, I'm not even sure the offer was real, because the way he said that, it really looks like his agent is pressuring EPO to get a new contract.
I think so too. And look, we said this before the final, he was kind of insinuating in his press conferences that he was looking for a new contract. He's saying, I don't understand why this has happened. This is not normal. This, that, and the other. So look, Poyet's still under consideration for to stay on.
And remember, excuse me to interrupt you. After the game, he also implied that it was his last game with the Ethniki.
Yeah, I guess he's sending a lot of mixed messages, Poyet, but it is interesting, because I don't maybe look at Poyet as strongly as others, but I think I made it clear, my opinion clear on social media. For me, he failed, so he shouldn't be given another chance. I know people have said, like, yeah, but his win rate is great for us, second best up behind Santos, and he did get us the closest we possibly could have. And so I appreciate that. And that's maybe why he is under consideration, because he has brought harmony in the dressing room. There have been certain players, including definitely Savelas, who's gone to Baldagos themselves and said, we want to keep Poyet because of how he's, because we like having him as manager. But you have to look at why we didn't qualify for the European Championships in a playoff group that where we were the favourites. And that's mostly down to Gus Poyet and his tactics. And I guess we will lead on to Greeks abroad as part of this discussion. But, you know, Pavlidis, who didn't play a single minute of football, is just hit 100 goals. 100 goal contributions in Eredivisie, in the Dutch league.
Yeah.
By the way, just to say
something about Poyet. I had a look and his salary is about 700k a year without bonus.
No, that's more than I thought it was. I thought it was about 500, but fair enough.
For the Ethniki, for Greece.
Yeah, for the Ethniki, and excluding the staff.
He stole a living.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. For a few games a year, he couldn't get us to, you know what, though? Baldakos and his boys are going to say, look how close he came. Look how close up the league's the closest it's ever been. It's all that bullshit they're going to paint it with.
Yeah.
Did he not? He put an Instagram post up saying, like, thank you, it's been an honor and all that. So
yes, he did.
He's even accepted he won't be there.
But then maybe that's him kind of saying that to give an insinuation he's open to other offers, but Greece is still a consideration, so he would consider coming back. I think that's why he did that. And just to go back onto the players, like Zolis, who didn't play and wasn't in the part of the squad for the final.
I have news from Irish Independent from yesterday afternoon.
Right.
Let me check. Ah, no. Never mind. They're just quoting Greek sources.
Ah, that's fair.
Because
okay.
yeah, because there was on Irish Independent, so it's like the Telegraph also. So I thought that was their own source, but no.
No, but as I was going to say, like Zolis, who didn't play a single minute and wasn't in the squad for the final. He's now top scorer of the whole of the second Bundesliga.
Yeah.
And so just to go back on to the stuff I was saying before, I think that Poyet kind of was the maker of his own downfall with the ethnic game and for Greece as well. And that's mainly why we're not at Euro 2024, you know, not to take away anything from Georgia, because they played us really well. They knew exactly what we were going to do, and they took their opportunities in the penalty shootouts, and they're in Germany this summer and we're not. But I think that, for me, long-winded, but that for me is why Poyet shouldn't be the national team manager for the Nations League or for the World Cup qualifiers. I don't know what give boys give me your thoughts on all this, because there's a lot to digest with this.
You know my thoughts. I haven't wanted him there for a while.
Yeah.
yeah. And it's just, yeah, but Baldagos, with all this news, I just look, you know, again, I would prefer him not to be head of the Greek Football Federation.
No, elections. I'm gonna be rude, but for real, just a sack and replace this clown, because for 2 years, the cup, the league, and how the Ethniki has been managed, regardless of Poyet performance, forget that. It has been a disaster.
And can he run for re-election then, Ellen, or does he have to step aside and let someone else be in charge? That's what I'm
wondering. I don't know.
That's a good question. I don't know about it. I don't remember about it.
Because I'm looking at all of the Greek Football Federation presidents. There hasn't been one that has stayed. Well, Gramenos was the last one who stayed for more than 2 years. So,
yeah.
And he was 2017 to 2021, but I can't remember if there were elections in between whereby he, you know, he was there for two years, then there was an election and he stayed. It seems like there hasn't been a one who stayed for much longer than that. So, yeah, we'll have to see. I would rather he didn't stay. I'd rather give someone else a go. But then at the same time, with the guys who are in the background of Greek football right now, are we going to get someone who could be just as bad, if not worse, than Baldagos? I don't know, because a lot of these people don't want to run Greek football like a football federation. They want to run it like a, well, purely
like a mob, like,
yeah, like
a
mob, a, not even like a
like
business,
a mob,
like a mob,
like a mob ruling a fucking casino.
And you know, and we saw that. I know we keep saying it. We saw that with Theo Zakarakis when he was president.
Yeah.
He got hounded out because he got death threats from his family and such, and he was someone who could have actually changed Greek football.
Death threats from to his family from political. I wouldn't mention them, but that's what he got because he wanted to change everything, and he wanted more professional on every level, and that's all he got. And not even 2 months later, he was forced to resign.
Yeah, and as we all know, change is not a good thing, especially when it comes to Greek football, apparently.
But, yeah.
Yeah. I any last words on this topic before we wrap up, boys?
I don't know who since I don't think someone like Zagorakis would run again.
No.
I really don't see someone decent to replace Baltako. But we have I still think we really have to get rid of him, because what he's done has been toxic with all the organization, the contradictory messages, etc. That's creating big chaos at every level.
Yeah. He'll point to the positives. Look at these playoffs. Great idea. Pats on the back. Balamakia, the closest the league's ever been, et cetera, et cetera. National team, closest in a decade to qualifying for a major tournament, but they didn't get there. He'll probably find a way to paint it as a success. He can't be there, but if someone like Zagorakis doesn't want to, well, didn't last in the role, who would?
No, exactly. Anyone with a footballing brain and anyone who wants Greek football to improve.
Oh, run miles away. Stay as far away as possible, yeah.
I'm sure once those elections come, we'll probably know who, well, I like to think we know who will be running. So we'll maybe do a lowdown on that in the off season when that comes, seeing as there's no Euro 2024 to cover.
That's a shame, isn't it? I was so looking forward to those, or winter in Australia. I was so looking forward to those podcasts that we're going to do around the Euros and all that. Such a shame.
I know. And I was looking forward to it too.
I still haven't gotten over that, you know.
It's been a week
and I'm still, pissed at.
My idea, but I don't know if it's possible, would be a collective direction. But because that's what we had in France for a while after the previous president resigned. But I'm not sure if it's possible with EPO.
No, I don't think so either, but we can only hope. There's always hope, even when it doesn't look like anything's going to change. But yeah, I guess we'll leave it here, guys. So thank you very much for listening, as always. We will be back early next week to cover the rest of the playoff fixtures and the playout matches that's coming this weekend, and also preview Europe as well, because Olympiacos and Balk are still in the Conference League quarterfinals. And yeah, thank you so much for supporting us on social media. Give us a follow if you haven't already on X, on Instagram, on Facebook. We are all on all of those platforms. And if you haven't already, give us a 5-star review on the podcast and recommend us to someone who might want to listen to a podcast about Greek football, and or just someone who loves football in general and wants to hear us chatting shit about things that aren't related to Greek football at all, but for some reason still end up in Greek football. But there we go. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you, Nick and Elaine, for joining me.
Thank you.
Even before we go, haven't we got some blogs or something?
Yes. Yes. I can't believe it. I knew I'd forget this. Right. So we have a blog coming out. Let me just quickly bring it up. So thank you. It was
I think it's from George Sotiropoulos.
Yes. So George Sotiropoulos is going to release a blog this week. And it's remind me, Nico, what it's regarding. I need to just find the messages.
On the ethnic leaf. Yes. I believe, and it goes back to the Skib era.
Yeah, so it's going to be a long-form blog. It's going to be quite a long one, but give it a read if you when it's out. It starts off from about Skibbe and talks about kind of the what he was like as manager back then, and kind of, I imagine, brings it full circle to the present day. So when George releases that, our George releases other George's blog, we'll make sure to promote it on social media, and we'll make sure that you give it a read, guys. If you when it's out, it'll be a good one, I think, to kind of highlight the issues of Greek football ever since Skibbe and beyond. So yeah, give that a read. Thank you for reminding me, Nick. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening again, and we'll catch you after the playoffs and playout fixtures coming this weekend. Catch you later.